You're going to here and traveling there, going to this, and you know it cost you that marriage. I said, stopped her. I said, no, that's not what caused that. It might have contributed to it, but it's not what caused it. You got to get straight with that business. She said, well, when's your time with AA going to be done? I mean, when's it going to be finished? Yeah, baby. No, listen, I got to tell you something, folks. I've been sober about 14 years, and I don't write hot checks anymore. You dig? And I don't cheat on the women I love. I haven't eaten out of a single dumpster. Not one. Can y'all get down with this? I just bought a little house down there on the lake in Kerrville, in Ingram, Texas, for Christ's sake. I'd love to move it up here to New York if I could. I guarantee you that little house would be worth about $300,000 up here, I guess. It's a chicken shit dump down there. I don't know what to tell you, but geez, I don't know how you guys do it. I'm trying to tell you guys, when I walked in here the other night, I mean, I could sit there and hug necks until my arms were cold. I mean, people that I met last year, and I got to be friends, and I got to put names with faces that I had talked to on the phone and emailed back and forth. I mean, that's what this is about. Life is so freaking exciting to be a part of a fellowship like this. And it's like brothers and sisters in arms here. And we got to keep doing that. And we got to encourage each other to stay in that trench. Because I'm going to tell you guys out there are taking the heat just like I'm taking the heat. You walk in with a big book and want to stop a meeting because it's going too long or going weird, going south, you're not going to be popular. We talked about it the other night in Queens. Somebody wants to ramble on, I just need a minute to share. Fuck you. You don't need a minute to share. Do you say it like that? No. Here's what you do. Because I leave the impression when I talk about it from the tapes, from CDs and stuff. Y'all get those tapes and you'll listen to it. You listen to it before you go in a meeting. Then you go in there and the first person that gets off the table, it's like you kill them. You're like Rambo shit. And it's like, you know, no, that's not what you do. The problem is not the person that's doing it. Who taught them to do it? We did. The problem is the formats that we're using in our meetings. If you don't want to hear that shit, stop going to stupid open discussion meetings. We've got way too many open discussion meetings as it is. Let's start some literature-based meetings, Asbel Sees It meetings, Big Book meetings, 12 and 12 meetings. Let's start literature-based meetings so that we can, and then you've got a topic out of the book, so there's no room to be talking about any of this other happy horse shit. In the preamble at my group right now, we have a deal. It says, we are not a dumping ground for your problem. If you just need to talk, come before the meeting or after the meeting, and we'll go out in the back and visit. But during the meeting, during our hour of recovery, we're going to talk about the topic being presented out of the big book. And I can go there every time with a clear idea, knowing that I'm not going to have to listen to somebody bitch, about the problem of the day. Guys, everybody in this room has a problem. We got to get straight with this, and I'll let you out. Everybody in this room has got a problem. Everybody's got something they need to talk about. I'm not making light of any of that. I'm just saying that our fellowship that was started 67 years ago was not presented to be that. It was a place we could go talk about getting well. If I drink a drug because I have a disease, why do I want to talk about the divorce? Let's go to a therapist and talk about the divorce. Let's find somebody in the fellowship that's been through it and talk to him after the meeting. Why should I take up your time as a single person talking about my fucking divorce? Why should I do that? It's disrespectful and it is selfish to the core. I'm having a bad day. No, you're not. Let me tell you who's having a bad day. The cat that just got up and he went into the medicine cabinet, got him a pill, and he got him a little shot, and he's going to walk out and try to have breakfast and hold it down and pat the kids on the head and drive to work with all those voices screaming that he's a worthless piece of shit, right? And he's going to go try to hold it together one more day, but he knows that by the end of the day, he's going to be absolutely shit-faced. He doesn't seem to be able to stop. Right now, can you listen? Can you listen right now all over New York? Somebody's walking into a crack house thinking they're going to buy a $20 rock and they're going to get raped. You hear me? Somebody's going to go buy one little bottle and before the night's over, they're going to go back and spend everything in their account to get some dope. Those people are having terrible days. And that's why we are here to help them not have those days anymore. If you don't understand this, come see me. And I will point you to a thing called the fifth fucking tradition. That says we have one primary purpose. That's to help the alcoholic and an addict who's still suffering. Can y'all get down with that? I'll tell you what I got in my briefcase over here, and I carry it always in my big book. I have a list of therapists. And when I see somebody that's in trouble and really needs a therapist, I have a list of lawyers. And when I see somebody that's in trouble and needs a lawyer, y'all follow me? I have a list of women's shelters. I have a list of abuse counselors. I have a list of just about anything that you need. And if you ever need some of those resources, you call me and I'll help you get hold of that. Because I'm supposed to be of help to everybody. Y'all follow me? And I'm going to try to help you get the help you need. But I'm not going to sit in a meeting like an idiot and try to be a junior therapist when I don't have the training or the knowledge to do that. We've got too many people talking out of their ass instead of talking out of here. We've got too many people trying to talk about shit in meetings that they don't know anything about. And you've got to stop it. You've got to stop it now. We have no opinion on outside issues. If somebody in your meeting is taking antidepressants and you want to share in a meeting about what you think about that, shut the fuck up. Because you're not a doctor. And your little opinion about what you think, we watch kill hundreds of people. Stop sharing your opinions in meetings. We have the message, clearly. Make sense, guys? That sound pretty rigid? Let me tell you real quick. Let me tell you what this does. This frees this entire group up to do what we do the best. It frees you up to be a friend. It frees you up to be a person that can love somebody else in the fellowship. You got the power to do something that nobody else in the world does. You know that therapy back there, that therapist back there that's not an alcoholic and addict? She can help you with all these other problems, but she can't help you with alcoholism and drug addiction. You can help because you've had experience with that. Make sense? Why are we taking the one thing that we can be useful at and pushing it aside and trying to do something that we're not trained to do? Why are we doing that? That's all I'm trying to say. You want to be a therapist? Go to school, get a license, and let's go. I'll send you some business. No, we need you. Treatment center. We're looking for a ton of help down in the treatment center where I work. We need people in the field if you want to go do that. But stop doing it in my meeting, please. Every one of you that are standing in the trench, thank you. Every old-timer in here that's got a day or two sobriety put together and are not going back out and trying it again just to... Thank you. If you're sober 30 days, bless you. Just think how much more power you're going to have at 60. Stop trying to do this one day at a time. Make a commitment. Make a commitment. We have... I love you people. We've got all the newcomers we need. Y'all understand that? We don't need any newcomers. We need the old-timers that are here to stay here. If you're on that fucking relapse pad and you're tripping in and tripping out and tripping in and tripping out, I need to suggest something to you that you're being selfish to the core. Find out what you are, make a commitment, work the steps, and stay. At the end of our meetings, we don't do this keep coming back shit. We say stay. Stay. You're here. You got underneath the door. Now let's stay. Because we need to help carrying the message to somebody else. Treatment centers, I'm telling you one more time, guys, are not cutting it. We are not answering the crowd. There's too many of you out there that need help. They're coming here to Alcoholics Anonymous, to Cocaine Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous by the thousands. And we got to be there, standing in the line, ready for them when they come through the door. You don't want to do that? I don't know what to tell you. That's your job. Why did God allow you to live? Come on, guys. In God's grace, what saved me from the dumpsters of Houston, Texas? What saved you from those crack houses? That 10-car pile-in about out there on the fucking turnpike that you were a part of? How come you walked away? How come you walked away? You walked away because God's got a job for you to do. And I got to tell you something. I said it last year and I'll say it again. There's a lot of people in our fellowship right now that don't want the responsibility of being sober. You like being a fucking victim. You like sitting on the edge, continuing to relapse and letting somebody else clean it up every time you turn around. You don't want to stand for something. Because with that comes from responsibility. And it's tough to do. It's uncomfortable to be responsible. The chairperson doesn't show up. You can't look the other way. Well, I'm just a relapser. I only have 3 days sober. I can't chair. You going to do that the rest of your life? Start chairing a meeting and you'll stop relapsing. Start being a part of this fellowship. Pick up the tools, folks. Let's go. I'm so blessed. And I'm blessed to know every single one of you in this room. Thank you for letting me come. See you soon.
Morning, everybody. My name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic. Got a reading out of a book called Osho. I love the title, Live Dangerously. Nobody is imperfect. Hence, nobody needs to be perfect. All that is needed is to live your life totally. Perfection is already there. We come from the perfect. Hence, we can't be imperfect. We are born out of the ultimate. We are waves in the ocean of God. So whatsoever is the quality of God is the quality of the waves. If God is perfect, we are perfect. So the very idea of becoming perfect is absurd. There's no need to become perfect. Everyone is already perfect. But we're not living that perfection in its totality. We are living at the minimum. We're not using our potential. We're using only a minor part of it. Scientists say not more than 7%. 93% potential is simply lost, and it was already there available for us to use. When you live 100%, you're really using the great opportunity that God has given you, and only at 100% the transformation happens, never before it. So my effort here is to make you love life as intensely as possible, to live each moment as wholly as possible, and slowly, slowly, something will start unfolding in you, and you will start discovering yourself. The more challenges you give yourself, the more you will discover. Another reading out of The Way to Love by Anthony DeMello. How many of you are in a relationship? Raise your hands. Okay. I have something here that I'm going to encourage you to go home and say to that person, and then maybe ask them to see if they'd be willing to say this back to you. Think of someone whose love you desire. Do you want to be important to this person, to be special and make a difference to his or her life? You want this person to care for you and be concerned about you in a special way? Then if you do, open your eyes and see that you are foolishly inviting others to reserve you for themselves, to restrict your freedom for their benefit, to control your behavior, your growth and development so it will suit their interest. It's as if the other person said to you, if you want to be special to me, you must meet my conditions. Third column. Because the moment you cease to live up to my expectations, you will cease to be special. So pause now and ask yourself, is it worth paying so much for so little? Imagine you say this to the person whose special love you want. Leave me free to be myself, to think my thoughts, to indulge my taste, to follow my inclination, to behave in ways that I decide are to my liking. When you say this, you're going to observe one of two things. Either your heart will resist these words and you will be exposed for the clinger and exploiter that you are. So now might be the time to examine your false belief that without this person you cannot live or cannot be happy. Or your heart will pronounce the words sincerely, and in that very instant all control, manipulation, exploitation, possessiveness, jealousy will drop. I leave you free to be yourself, to think your thoughts, to indulge your taste, to follow your inclinations, to behave in ways that you decide are to your liking. That's love. That's love. That which you love, you must let go of. Oh, I'm well rested this morning. Bed at 9 o'clock. I've known Mickey and Chris a long time, and other than missing spending some time with them, I have a clear sense of the intent and path of their heart. I'm glad they're in my life. I'm glad they're carrying the message that they're carrying. And so I hope you all enjoyed their presence last night, as I'm sure you did. It's nice to have fellow travelers, on the way, on the path. I'm going to talk about several things. One of the first things I want to talk about with you all this morning is steel on steel. I'm wearing a shirt that says steel on steel. And I may be the only one in this room that's had this happen, but in sobriety, trying to live a spiritual life, at times I have found myself up against self-delusion. And the problem with that is if you don't have people in your life that you've given spiritual consent to, very slowly and very gradually, this self-delusion can take you down a path which is certainly not in your highest good. And in some cases can take you back to alcohol. So having had that experience, not once, but several times, when I was in Kerrville, Texas in the early 90s, it was a very small town, 18,000, and I could not find someone in that town that had what I wanted. Understand this about me. I length of time doesn't impress me necessarily because I know what that's about. I've always just looked for people who have some things I want. And then my deal is I go up to them and I have a question, how did you get that way? And what I want one thing and one thing only from them, because they're a human power. I want them to tell me the course of action they took to have the experience to be transformed in the fashion in which they present themselves. There was nobody in that town that had anything that I want. I was doing more work than anyone in the town. So I was starting to sponsor some guys, and having suffered from self-delusion and realizing the tremendous trap in that, one day I was reading the Bible, reading Proverbs, because I love stories. Bible's full of great stories. And I'm reading Proverbs 27:17, and I read a phrase that says, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. Proverbs is full of the necessity of seeking counsel, even when you're Solomon, who was the wisest man on the planet at that time. I thought, well, if it's good for Solomon, it might be good for Mark. So I got a hold of the guys that I sponsored and had them come over to the house, and I said, look, I want to do something. I don't like being rudderless in terms of accountability, so I want to start something, and a name came to me. I want to call it Steel and Steel. And what I want to do is I want to sit down and I want to meet weekly, and there are some areas that I want to discuss. And we all work with the path of consideration at that time, but the areas that I wanted to discuss, number one, were where was I very specifically with my program? By that, I mean in Steel and Steel now, when I sit down, I start by reporting how many times in the last 7 days did I do morning prayer and meditation, and did I do my evening review? How many times in the last week, how many meetings did I go to? Where am I specifically in the steps? If I'm rewriting inventory, be very specific about that. I'm in my resentment second column. Yeah, if I am making amends, if I started with 20 amends, how many amends have I made since the last time we met? How many approaches are left to make? And we came up with a separate category for financial amends, because we discovered that we don't mind making amends, but boy, we hate paying the money back. And we wanted to be accountable for that. See, at some point in time in your spiritual life, you're going to start to understand that everything is connected. If you're dishonest with any one area of your life, if you don't think it's impacting every area of your life, you're absolutely wrong. So let me give you an example. I would be earning money and owing financial amends and could have been paying larger sums of money, and I wasn't, which means I was, again, being dishonest. I stole the money from him once to begin with, and here I am sober, quote, making amends, and I'm stealing again. And without that kind of accountability. And then I'm wondering why there's not much more money coming in. I had some strange things happen to me. Some of you that have made amends happen. When all the money got paid back, it was amazing how much more money came into my life. It's funny how that works, you know. Of course, in hindsight, I've often thought, well, you know, that would make sense. I owe this money. I'm unwilling to pay it back. Why would God bless me with a whole bunch of money when it's obvious I'm going to be dishonest and selfish with the money I've been receiving? So that was on Steel on Steel. If I was working with people specifically, where were they in the steps? So that's basically a review of the circle and the triangle, very specific review. We reached a place where we'd take a timer and not have to report this information in 10 minutes. I'd set the timer and go. So I would report all that information, and then following that, normally sex and checks go hand in hand. So then I would talk about my financial life. See? And I got very, we would get very specific about our financial life, you know, in terms of how much we're making, how much is going out, where are we at with savings, those kinds of things. If I was in a relationship, I would report on that relationship. All phases of that relationship, including the sexual energy of the relationship. Then I would report on relationships in the workplace. How are things going in that area? Then we would report on our physical health. Let me tell you something. That group of men, and Chris was one of them, this is how nuts drunks are. When we started doing this, we all worked for a company and had great insurance, and none of us had had a physical in about 5 years. As far as I know, none of us had had our teeth cleaned. I mean, we had great dental and medical coverage, and we're sound asleep to this thing called our human body. You know, I mean, it was just nuts. We weren't working out. Several of us were overweight. So we would report on our physical body. And then we like to finish with the definition of honesty. Say what you do, do what you say. And then what would happen is then I would pull out a little notebook, and they would go around and give me considerations. And I could not defend myself. I could no longer elaborate and explain, which is real tough. All I could do is say thank you. I went through a real strange phenomenon because I'm sponsoring all these people, right? So I get the notebook and they start in, and they were not kind. And so you'd write the consideration, you know, like Chris would give me one. I look at him, I go, thank you. And I'd be saying to myself, I will get you. You know, you're having that internal dialogue. We all went through it, every one of us. And so we'd get done, and then the next person, they would set the timer, and they would report all this information. And I'm telling you, that kind of accountability was at a far deeper level than I ever had with a sponsor. And it was to several men, and it has to this day remained a key piece of my recovery, of my spiritual life, that kind of accountability. We did that for several years. And I moved to Austin. I did it in Austin. When I moved to Dallas, I did it in Dallas. So, and when the men that I sponsor and work, I normally meet with them once a week, and they'll come over at the house, and I have a two-page form, steel and steel. And instead of this general whining, bitching, and moaning, complaining and stuff, they basically will just report very succinctly steel and steel because it's a capsule of their whole life. Now, we discovered a very strange phenomenon as a result of this. When we were reporting on the first part of Steel on Steel, which is spiritual living, it was incredible how smooth the rest of our life went. However, when we begin to report that we were not doing prayer and meditation and not doing evening review, and we hadn't done much with the steps, and we weren't going to very many meetings, and we weren't very active in sponsorship, it was amazing how the rest of our life was very problematic. Wow, isn't that interesting? See, AA does a weird thing to you. You come into AA and you're used to try and hit all your problems head on and manage your life. AA says, no, come over here and work the steps. Come to know God and the rest of that shit will take care of itself. What? Yeah, no, don't worry about the job. Write your inventory. No, I got to get it. No. So, you know, so I throw that out there for your consideration. Now, over the years, several people around the country have started Steel on Steel. There is a lot of resistance to it. Why do you think that is? A lot of accountability. One story about that, financial amends, has a guy show up to Steel on Steel. This guy had owed child support for years. He had made the approach. He was getting a chance to spend time with his daughter again. He was paying out this child support, and he was way behind. Doing the right thing, and he'd been going along about 6 months. So this is how nuts alcoholics are. And he had a car that was paid for that ran very well. This is a guy when I was down in Austin, and he shows up at Steel on Steel, and he's all excited. So what happens is he starts to report, and when it gets to financial, he reports that he's now going to go buy a Z28 that's got a car payment of about $500 a month, and then he's going to be able, going to get financing, going to be able to pick that up in a couple days, and he's just all animated and excited. So we keep going along, and he gets done, and so it came my time to give him a consideration. I said, I would like you to consider the idea, do you believe that you can stay sober stealing more money from that little girl and that little girl's mother by driving that Z28? And he looked at me and said, would you give me a little more clarification? And I said, you are years behind in child support. You have a car that is paid for that runs very, very well. And your desire for a Z28 is about your selfishness. And I said, the guilt of what you have not done for that child will eat you alive and you'll get drunk again. So what I want to report is he did not buy the Z28, but he realized what a faux pas he had made because it made the group realize he could have been paying even more in child support. So he upped his child support payment. And he had to say thank you. A lot of great stuff happened off that. A lot of great stuff in every part of our lives. So I throw that out for your consideration. A lot of people have asked me about that, so I wanted to talk about it. I have found from experience, don't make the groups more than four or five. But I find that to be a very strict spiritual discipline that I have followed that has been so beneficial in my life. So again, I throw it out for your consideration. We spent a lot of time, I'm not sure what all Joe and I have talked about, lots of different stuff. I want to talk a little bit more about steps five through nine with you all. Then Joe's going to share a little bit. We'll take a break and come back, and then I'm going to do my final piece because I'm going to catch a plane back to Dallas. Let's talk a little bit about fifth steps. I was trying to think from 91. I believe from 1991 to this moment, I personally have probably read my own inventory, I would say, a minimum of 40 times, if not more. I'm sure the number is probably higher because I started doing multiple fifth steps in 1994. If you want to get experience in giving fifth steps, write inventory and read them. If you want to get experience in listening to fifth steps, listen to a lot of them. I don't know what the number is. It's in the hundreds of fifth steps I've listened to. So I have some experience with this. So I want to share a little of that experience. Number one, for me...
Your fifth steps don't mean the same inventory that many times.
Pardon me?
New inventories, not the same one that many times.
Oh, yeah. He's saying, y'all understand when I say that, that's new inventory I've written? That's not the same piece of inventory 40 times. Y'all understand that? Like, for example, in the last 2 months, I've read inventory 3 times. That's current inventory. That's the only thing I'm interested in. I'm interested today, as I sit here this morning, I'm interested in the stuff today that I'm up against that will turn my life into dis-ease and then ultimately take me back to a drink. I'm not interested in anything else. I'm current. There's nothing back there. So when I talk to you about inventory, I'm talking current stuff here. So when I say since 91 I've done that, those inventories were current with what was going on in my life at that time. And I do that because I like the effect produced by it. I'm no different, Joe. I wish to God I could just write inventory every 4 or 5 years. I'm resentful because I can't. But I've tried that. It didn't work. You know, it's that old question, is it working? If it's working, that's fine. Go for it. It didn't work for me. This works for me, being that accountable, writing inventory at that level. I stay very, very... I call it, I stay current and I stay free, which is why I do it. So there are some things, though, that I've learned around inventory over the years. If I'm going to read inventory, I'm very, very careful who I read inventory to. And the reason is because my big book instructs me it's about life and death. Now, I don't know what those words mean to you. They have some significance to me. I need to find people who understand and approve what I'm driving at, and understanding is that my life is on the line here because the stuff I'm up against that I've written on inventory is the stuff that will get me drunk and has me diseased. I'm not interested in finding someone who's concerned about how I might feel about something they say to me. I want to find someone who has some experience, who understands what it is that I'm doing, that my life is on the line. I don't care if you're 1 year sober or you're 50 years sober. You're still up against some stuff. So that's the criteria that I work for. Big Book gives you some instructions. I have read a lot of inventory to men that I sponsor because they know me, because they've done the work, because they understand and approve what I'm driving at. Joe and I certainly over the years have read inventory to each other. Chris and I have read inventory to each other. This last piece of work, I read inventory to, we did the steps in a small group, and two of the men that I sponsor, we swapped fifth steps. Now, they stay current. If I work with you, just so you know this, you know, it's like Joe said, you only go through the steps for the first time one time. So that first inventory is a pretty big inventory. Thereafter, if you're staying fairly current, the inventories get smaller. So I swapped fifth steps with a guy named Rocky and a guy named Bob. And then I have a man named Bill M., 29 years sober, ex-Marine. Yeah, that's the kind of guy I need as a sponsor. See, you know, he's the kind of guy. I don't know. You know, I think you get the kind of sponsor you need. I'm a bullet person. I got broad shoulders and a big ass. Better bring it on. See, that's the kind of sponsor I need. No, you know, no bullshit, no flowers, no, you know, Mark, you're strangely insane here. You know, you're being dishonest. I mean, I need that kind of accountability. We don't need to sugarcoat it. We don't need to flower it. And Bill fits that role. So I read the inventory. We begin pretty much with a similar process depending on the setting and circumstances. But if we're going to do it at my house, we're going to meditate for a little while. I like to burn sage, which is a Native American tradition I learned, to purify myself in the room for this juju stuff that's going to come out of this drunk sitting across from me, contaminate my home and pollute my home. And then we like to read the instructions out of the big book about what we're doing to get very, very clear about the purpose of what we're going to be doing in this fourth and this fifth step. And I want to highlight a couple things. Now, I know there's a lot of people that do them driving in cars and all that other stuff. I just know when my life's on the line, I'd like the guy to be paying just a touch more attention to me than that. One of the things I like to do, we'll start on page 70. There's a couple things I wanted to mention. And I have them read in first person the instructions for the fifth step. But it talks about, if I've been thorough about this inventory, I've written down a lot, I've listed and analyzed my resentments, I have begun to comprehend their futility and their fatality, and I make them explain to me, do you see the futility of resentments? Do you see the fatality of it? I've commenced to see the destructiveness. I've begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even my enemies, for I look on them as sick people. I like to ask, has that happened to you? If that has not happened, they've missed a whole bunch of stuff in inventory, in the writing of the inventory. I've listed the people I've hurt by my conduct. I'm willing to straighten out the past if I can. In this book, I read again and again, faith did for me what I could not do for myself. I hope that I am convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked me off from God. Your self-will cannot eliminate your self-will. You understand what I just said? God is the only one who can remove self-will. Our vehicle for that is steps 4 through 9. My experience is you can't pray away self-will. You can't think away self-will. I know there's these people that are so spiritually evolved, they tell me they do four-column inventories in their head, and I say, oh, that's real cute. Oh, I can see my stuff, Mark. Column 1, 2, 3, 4 in my head. Oh, that's great. Says, if I've already made a decision, my third step in an inventory, my grocery handicaps, I've made a good beginning. And then we turn the page in chapter 6 into action. Toward the bottom of the page, 5 lines up. If I skip this vital step, I may not overcome drinking. There's that connection between that first step, isn't it? Dying an alcoholic death. See? top of page 73. I took inventory, all right, hung on to some of the worst items in stock. That's, again, for me, a key indicator about who listens to this fifth step, being able to pull some of that stuff out of me. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. This is back to the theater of the lie. He or she is very much the actor. To the outer world, we present our stage characters. This is the one we want our fellows to see. We want to enjoy a certain reputation, but know in our heart we do not do it. And then I like to read this next section from a position of sobriety, if I'm doing it with someone who's reworking the steps. The inconsistency between my stage character and my heart and how what's really going on is made worse by the things I do on my sober sprees. Coming to my senses, I'm revolted at episodes I very clearly remember. These memories are a nightmare. I tremble to think someone in AA might have observed me. So as fast as I can, I push these memories far inside of myself. I hope they never see the light of day. That keeps me under constant fear and tension. That makes for more untreated alcoholism. My friends are inclined to agree with me. I seldom told them the whole truth, nor did I follow their advice. I must be entirely honest with somebody if I expect to live long or happily in this world. To me, that's both a promise and a warning. Then you get some more instructions. Then at the top of page 75, about five lines down, I explain to my partner what I'm about to do and why I have to do it. My partner better realize that Mark is engaged upon a life and death errand. How many of you have ever had that sentence as a topic in a meeting? Not a single one. Isn't that interesting? There's some interesting sentences in here that have never been a topic in a meeting of AA, like holds the key to my future, realize I'm on a life and death errand. Sometimes I have to ask myself, what are we talking about in these meetings? What are we really talking about in these meetings when I think of what's in this book and what is available to us? You know, 10-step. I've entered the world of the spirit, new sixth sense. There's some incredible stuff to talk about in our meetings, but that'd be a great topic for you guys to throw out at a meeting is share your experience with what it means when it says you're engaged in a life and death errand in the reading of a inventory. What does that mean to you? What has been your experience with that? What does it mean when they say life and death errand? Pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twisted character, every dark cranny of the past. And then we do the inventory. I get very, very involved in the listening of a fifth step. This person's life is on the line. A lot of focus, third and fourth columns. Fear inventory. Selfish, self-centered, sexual misconduct. Where are they at fault? See, it's their inventory. Thorough self-examination. Standing, buck-ass naked, right? And you ain't so hot no more. Don't care how long you're sober. You got your crap all over the place, right? Inconsiderate here, selfish here. Boom. See, I've listened to some inventory with people. I think the longest sobriety was 42 years. There's very little difference between what was read to me by that man at 42 years sobriety and what was read to me recently with a man with 6 months. Just has a different face. Same selfishness. Same dishonesty. Still going on. Why? Because that's a human condition, that's why. Length of time away from a drink doesn't remove you from being a human and making mistakes, see? So we get done with that process. I do like to ask a question at the end of it, and that is, have you withheld anything? If they're new, the sphincter always tightens, and they say, what do you mean? And it's normally something sexual. So I like to get all that out, see? Another reason I normally will take pieces of myself and almost share it with anybody I'm swapping fifth steps with. And the reason is I want them to understand there ain't nothing special going on here. There ain't nothing special about me. You know, I'm just like you. I've missed the mark a lot, made a lot of mistakes, and a lot of those I made with a lot more time sober than this person. And that creates a sense of ease and comfort in them, see? So we get done with that, and then I like to read. These are the fifth step promises, some of the most powerful ones in the whole book. You know, so for those of you that are in the process of just getting to write inventory, do you hear that? Getting to write inventory. and getting to finish inventory, here are the promises of that experience when you get done with the fifth step. Fifth step promises. Once I've taken this step with holding nothing, I can be delighted. I can look the world in the eye. I can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Check these promises out. My fears fall from me. They fall from me. I begin to feel the nearness of my Creator. I may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now I begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. Now, I don't get that promise, the feeling the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly, and I'm done with the fifth step. And then you have these people in AA saying, take your time. Take your time. Book's very clear that you don't begin your spiritual experience till you're done with the fifth step. Oh, take your time. I understand your life's on the line, but take your time. We don't want to rush this thing. No, we do want to rush this thing because they need power. They need to know God. They need the obsession of the mind removed from them. It's not about taking time. It's life and death stuff. Follow me? Follow the instructions in the book. Don't let anyone read your big book, whether you're sponsored or being sponsored. This is deadly stuff, this illness that we have. You know, talking to a few of you over this weekend, you know, wake up and smell a coffee. You leave here this weekend, every single person in this room, and that includes Joe and I, there's a body of work that your conscience started talking to you about this weekend, isn't there? Yeah, well, get to work on it. Get to work, spiritual living, right? Get to work on it. Pay attention to that still small voice that spoke to you this weekend. I've had several people approach about amends. You know, said, wow, thank you, I think. See, I sat this morning, we did prayer and meditation, me and a bunch of men, a fabulous experience. And we did a bunch of prayers and we did a meditation. Then we went around and located ourselves. And what I ask each of them is, okay, what is the body of work you're going to do when you leave here today? Today, what's the body of work? And then I shared what it is I'm going to be doing. So each of you, you know, it's a deadly thing that we're up against. But look at these promises. We feel we're on the broad highway walking hand in hand in the spirit of the universe. My God, how could you not get excited about writing inventory if this is what you get to experience on the other side? Those are some of the most powerful promises in the entire book. Now you get some instructions. Returning home, sit down for an hour. I like to set a timer. I believe there's spiritual virtue in following instructions. Doesn't say 34 minutes. Doesn't say an hour and a half. It says an hour. So I set a timer for an hour. And then I'm going to go through this paragraph. And I'm going to very carefully review what I've done. And then I like to pause, take a look at what I've done, kind of rehash in my mind the fifth step I just did. Thank God from the bottom of my heart, I know God better. I like to sit for about 5 minutes with that. Do I know God better? There's a reason you should know God better at this point in time in the work. Because you are willing to face and be rid of many things that stood between you and God in the fourth and fifth step. You did that exercise, and at this point in time in this review, you should know God better. Know, K-N-O-W, not believe. It's a knowing. You will know God better when you've done that. I promise it. I read the first five steps. Did I admit anything? And then there's some questions. Is my work solid so far? Are my stones? Second step's the cornerstone. Third step's the keystone. Are they in place? Skipped on the cement, put it in the foundation, mortar without sand. Do I know what's wrong with me? Do I know the solution? A couple things on 6 and 7, then I'm going to let Joe chat here for a bit. Over the years, in the sixth step, you're trying to identify character defects, if you will, the exact nature of your defects, the defects that your ego has used to operate, living a life based on self-will. And that becomes the nuts and the bolts of the sixth step. Over the years, I've used a lot of different tools. The tool I found most effective is the sacraments of penance, in which they take the seven deadly sins but embellish them unlike any tool I've ever seen before. So several years ago, when I get to the sixth step, as I recently just did three times, I take the sacraments of penance, and I go through them, and I either pronounce myself guilty or not guilty based on the inventory that I just read. I'll give you an example. One of the reasons I like this. I'll just use, let's see, anger. We all have a little experience with anger, right? Here's how they define anger. Open rebellion against God or our fellow creatures. Its sole purpose and desire is to eliminate any obstacle to our self-seeking, to retaliate against any threat to our security, to avenge any insult or injury to my person. Guilty. Arrogance. Insisting others conform to my wishes, recognize my leadership, accept my own estimate, my own worth, overbearing, argumentative, opinionative, and obstinate. Guilty. Vanity. Crediting to myself rather than to God my talents, abilities, insights, accomplishments, and good works. Refusal to admit indebtedness to others or adequately to express gratitude for their help. Hypocrisy. Pretense to virtues I do not possess. False humility. Harsh judgment on others for faults I excuse in myself. Can you feel this stuff? Yeah. Boasting, exaggeration, drawing attention to myself by talking too much. By claiming ability, wisdom, experience, or influence I do not have. This is a great tool for anyone suffering from spiritual pride, isn't it? Undue concern over expenditure of time, money, or energy on looks, dress, surroundings in order to impress others. Ew. Seeking, desiring, or relishing flattery or compliments, right? There's a couple more. Pugnacity, attack upon another in anger. Murder in deed or desire. Check this out. Combativeness or the nursing of grudges. Injury to another by striking, cursing, or insulting, or by damaging his reputation or property. Being quarrelsome, bickering, contradiction, nagging, rudeness, or snubbing. Yeah. Yes. This is one of my favorites on the hit parade of how well I'm doing in 20 years. It's called malice, ill will, false accusations, slander, backbiting, reading false motives into others' behaviors. I love this next one: the initiation, collection, and retailing of gossip. Arousing, fostering, or organizing antagonism against others. Unnecessary criticism, even when true. Anyhow, as you can see, this has been a very effective tool for me in seeing the exact nature of my defects as a result of the inventory that I've read. I go through that and proclaim myself guilty. I would like to tell you that the number of times that things I highlight is greatly diminished. That is not true. I pretty well am safe by murder by deed. Outside of that, there's just still a lot of this stuff that I see. And then I get down on my knees, and I like to do a 7-step on my knees. God, take all of me, good and bad. Seeing what this does for me, I mean, at 20 years, and I mean this, I love God with every part of my being. And God, I fall short, you know. See, where am I without God? Where am I without you? You know? Where am I without that oneness? See, what I am is I'm alone and I'm separated and I'm drunk again. So I use this as a tool because it broke my heart open the first time. I had a lot of spiritual pride the first time I used the sacraments of penance, and it broke my heart open. And it keeps it broken open, and that's exactly where it needs to be. So that's all I got for now.
Good morning. My name is Joe Hawk, and I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here this morning. We're going to go till 10. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back at 10:15, and because Mark has a flight to catch, he's going to talk until he's done, 9, 10, 11, and 12. You can't talk about 10, 11, and 12 without talking about 9. You can't do much with 10, 11, and 12 until you've stopped talking about 9. You know what I mean? A lot of people talk about making amends. But we talked yesterday about how do you know when you're willing to make amends, you start to hear really strange noises. Ding dong. Knock, knock, knock. Hello, this is Joe Hawk. Do you remember me? No, I don't. Oh, I thought it was going to be a big deal. You know, this is Joe Hawk. Do you remember me? Yes, I do. You fucking hurt me. Oh, I thought it was going to be no big deal. You never know. When the book says 9 times out of 10, you'll be amazed, it doesn't say comfortable. I always think amazed would be comfortable. I mean, I've been amazed at some really uncomfortable stuff. Yeah. But the glory on the other side of your first set of amends, you've entered the world of the Spirit. The work will never be the same. You'll never do it without power. Your life will never be the same. So we're going to go back to that basic question, because I'm hearing it all over the country. Have you had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, or are you telling people you've been through the steps when all you've had is a spiritual awakening as the result of 1 through 9.5, 9 3/4, 9 3/8, and you got those ones that you're not talking about because you've elevated yourself to a position in your group where you couldn't possibly talk about that. But you're telling people that you've been through the steps 3-4 times and you still have unfinished amends. You wouldn't tell them if you hadn't finished 4. You got that much dignity. You wouldn't tell them if you hadn't finished a 5th step because you got that much dignity. You haven't fallen victim to working on your defects or trying to fix yourself in 6 or 7. But you got that stuff. You got that stuff. You got that armed robbery. You got that one relationship. You got that debt. Oh, I got to have enough to go back to him in my pocket before I can go back to him. The full amount. That's ego. My sponsor said when he had a $5,000 debt and he went to the guy with $50, it was one of the most humbling experiences he ever had. Right? You got to start asking yourself, have you had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps or not? We've talked about a lot of stuff this weekend. It's not the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. We talked about what the paper cover in the 4th edition says about the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. It used to say page 1 through 164 is the AA message. Now it's something that used to be the foundation for some alcoholics. Our General Service Conference made a big mistake. But they really didn't. I think they simply made a statement, as with the stories and other parts of the book they've been able to change, reflective of the condition of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And modem to modem, face to face, I am never going to believe that sitting in front of one of those computers is the same as looking in your eyes at your home group around the corner. And they also said that. We talked about some myth questions. The interesting thing is, every myth I thought I was facing that was in Alcoholics Anonymous was a myth I was facing within myself. There's a lot of myths. Find your myth. A lady asked me one time in India, she was a professor in Maryland of mythology. And she taught there for 25 years. And she looked at me and I'd asked her a bunch of questions. And she said, can I ask you a question? My God, I felt like I was at my home group in Santa Monica where we have the grace and the dignity and the respect to learn about doing that. We make mistakes. We find out about being accountable. And she said to me, what's your current myth? I didn't even have to think for 2 seconds. This was about 5 years ago. I've gotten free of this myth. I'm sure there's a new one. My myth was the Sirens of Titan. Those are blonde women that sing songs on the shore and you crash right into the fucking rocks. That's what the Sirens of Titan were. Yeah. Yeah. It's not blondes anymore. But I still got my sirens. Ooh, come on over here. I don't want to. Come on over here. It's going to hurt. I don't want to. Come on over here. Boom. Right? We talked about a new step. A new step that we've all been on. We didn't even know we were on it for however long we were on it. I've been on it more than once. Step zero. That's that space either between your last drunk And the time you submit yourself to this process and begin step one, or those times in sobriety where you're resting on your laurels because now you got more than two alternatives. You're back to three alternatives or four alternatives. It ain't those two anymore that are described. It's not about, you know, how do you blot out the consciousness of your intolerable situation as best you can if you're convinced and you've settled for comfort that you're not in an intolerable situation? How do you blot out the consciousness of a great situation, settling for comfort, not hungry for more, and you're back to step zero because there's now more than two alternatives in your recovery? It's easy to submit to the process as you've been beat by alcohol and drugs when you get here. Nothing to lose. You're not afraid when some guy says, for you to drink is to die. Man, that might be my hope. That might be my relief. But when somebody says you might go on feeling the way you're feeling this far away from your last drunk than you've ever been, and you've got this stuff going on inside, and you know there ain't nobody or nothing out here you can blame because things out here have gotten better, and you get in touch with what it means to be suffering from a disconnection from your pure spirit, which is the spiritual malady. The spirit's pure, but you're disconnected from it and you're suffering. Because you only got three dimensions to operate from, body, mind, and emotions. And you're dragged around by those three things. But then you're taken to a place through this process where it's time to laugh and dance and have fun. There's a shift right around the fifth step. It says you might have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now, that means now. Now actually means now. It doesn't mean now next week. It doesn't mean now down the road. Now means now. Now you've begun to have a spiritual experience. The book makes a major shift between that returning home and the next page. On that next page where 6 and 7 are, where there's some major considerations, people go with 6 and 7 to one extreme or the other. It's either my sponsor gave me a list of character defects and the order that I'm going to work on them in, because I'm going to fix myself because I'm no longer the healee, I'm the healer. I'm no longer the creature, I'm the creator, and I'm going to fix myself, to the other extreme that 6 and 7 are nothing. God's going to do all the work. There's no major considerations, just kind of skip over it. Yeah. We talked about morality beyond good, bad, right, or wrong. Nobody in this room is right, nobody in this room is wrong. Nobody's done anything wrong. You haven't done the process wrong. If you're hungry for more, you're hungry for more. The morality of Alcoholics Anonymous for me is it working or isn't it? Is doing 1 through 9 once, living the rest of your life in 10, 11, and 12 working? Is it satisfying? Is it taking you to a new dimension of peace and freedom? Or do you seem to reach this point because of those unfinished amends or with finished amends, current for the first time in your life? You seem to hit this pocket where things that 6 months ago were exciting and your life was on fire and you were feeling passionate about the people you were working with and your lover, your husband, your wife. And then all of a sudden, the ego attaches itself to a valid experience with God. This is how powerful the ego is. It can attach itself to a valid experience with God, suck the life out of it, make it yours. You somehow had something to do with making it happen. It then becomes the very noose around your neck that's hanging you. A valid experience with God. That's called reconstruction of the ego. What Harry Thiebault is either true for you or it's not. And that debate, which I don't need to debate anymore because it's simply based on this morality, it did not work for me. It took me 2 times starting the work to get through my first set of amends. So that was not 2 times through the work. That was starting 2 times to get through once. But when I remember a day when from my head to my heart went the realization that I had approached or seen and started to do. That doesn't mean I'd follow through. I had followed through on every amends. That didn't mean there wasn't ongoing amends. You got relationships in your life that'll take the rest of your life ongoing by the way you live. But I had gone to everybody and made my approaches. The debts were starting to get paid. And I started to watch my life just explode. Right? I would wish that for everybody in Alcoholics Anonymous. And anything that I have to say, that I can say, because I ain't got the power to get nobody nowhere, And I told you, I don't even look for people in the world that I can help anymore. Because I ended up with people that a human power could help. I was surrounded by people that I could help. I look for mad dogs that nobody can help, that are beyond human aid, and point them to that which can, those that are beyond human aid. I quit looking for people. I quit helping others. I quit thinking I was carrying the... At one point, I thought I was actually the holder of the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. All I do, I just got some experience. I'm just a fuck-up with some experience and a lot of grace. And that's where I see the grace, in the mistakes, in the amends. When I'm sitting across from you 15 years sober, and I can't say that when I lied to you I was drunk, because I'd much rather make amends for being drunk and committing an armed robbery and going back to the person that I robbed or the Battle Creek Police Department than say to you that at 15 years, out of absolute disrespect to the trust that we had in our friendship, I lied to you 15 years sober. There's where the grace of God is. There's where the grace of God is. Not in the great works. The great joke on me is that I've had to do a lot of work to realize that it's not the work that I've done that's given me what I have. We talked about using a prayer when you start this work for an open mind and a new experience. We talked about four or five basic questions to answer. And if you're working with someone, you answer them too, because it's if you sponsor people and you're not just collecting babies, that's what they call them where Mickey and I live. Babies. I don't have babies. I don't have sponsees. I don't have protégés. I got friends that are sick just like me, and we get to watch and experience the grace and the glory and the power of God. Walk hand in hand. I'll go right there with you. I don't have to live there, but I can go there. I can go to the first step. I know what it was like. Doesn't do me much good to remember it. It might do you some good, but I don't put much on it anymore. Because that's not what it's like now. Matter of fact, I even said that wrong. A lot of speakers think that our book says we're supposed to share in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. That is not what the big book says. It says we're supposed to share in a general way what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. Because I don't know what it is. It changes from me to day to day. One day you're it. One day she's it. One day the money's it. One day it is it. I don't know what it is. But I know a little bit about myself. And in the fourth step, sometimes I got to face what I'm not facing anymore what I do drunk. I can't tell you the last inventory that something from the past came up. Once in a while, I have to face what the fuck I do with power and glory and grace in my life. With power. Looking at a period of time when I was in every one of my inventories, when I start one, it's because I've been in 10, 11, and 12 for a while, thinking I've reached some state of perfection. I'm like above it all. I'm just floating along. And then I submit myself to this. I usually hit bottom with current unmanageability. Here I am. And it feels like you're up against a new wall, and you just can't seem to, even with power, you don't have enough to push yourself through the current stuff because you haven't done what's necessary to get through it. You're just up against it. You're either going to go around it, around it, around it, or you're going to face it. You answer these questions. Is this work what I want to do again? Am I willing to go to any length, although I might not know what that would look like or where God might take me? I didn't want to leave Santa Monica, but I got taken to a place that was like living in heaven the last 5 years. But I found out something interesting. You know the negative way people say, like if you take a geographic, you're going to be where you're going to end up. You're always going to be there. Check this out. If you get to a place within yourself where for the first time in your life, you want what you have rather than wanting what somebody else has. You know what? I want what I have today. And I've never felt that way about myself for a long time in this program. And I want more. Because what I have is a personal relationship with God that sometimes I take for granted. Do you know how many people in churches and therapy offices and spiritual programs and movements want with all their heart what we take? You know, imagine going to some places in the world and saying, what have you done in the last 10 years? I haven't seen you at the church for 10 years or your high school reunion. You say, I've developed a personal relationship with the creator of the universe. It's really no big deal, but, you know, we take it for granted sometimes what we're given. The keys to the kingdom. My God, we can avert death. Promises me that. We can go where alcoholics aren't supposed to go. We can live at perfect peace and ease. We can sit alone at perfect ease and comfort. That's after a fifth step when you haven't withheld anything. And you want to know if you've done a thorough fifth step? When the fifth step promises start coming true. Now. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly with all of them. Can I go home? Review what I've done. I'm going to have to talk a little bit more, but about five through nine. But we'll come back at 10:15, and we'll let Mark go until he's done, and then I'm going to do a couple sessions and question and answers. So let's come back at 10:15.
Okay.
They did a great job, didn't they?
Yeah. I just found out that Rick, do you all know who he is? There's a bookstore in New Jersey that carries the book that has the Sacraments of Penance in it. So if you will find him after the meeting, he will tell you where that bookstore is, and he actually has a copy of the book with him. The book, I believe, it used to be out of print. Maybe it's back in print again. But any of you interested in getting a copy of that you think it may be beneficial to you, I've already forewarned him some of you will be approaching him. All right, we ready? All right. I'm Mark. I'm an alcoholic. We have to wrap this by 11:30, so I'm going to spend 15, 20 minutes max sharing with you and give the rest of the time to Joe. I've said my goodbyes to a lot of you, and then right at 11:30, I got to catch a ride to the airport. It has been a pleasure being here, spending time with you, seeing some people that I've begun to develop friendships and I love to care about over the years, and we'll be back. Joe and I. By the way, next Wednesday night, Joe's going to be doing 3 hours on the 10th 11th step at a location in Jersey. I think there's flyers around here. If you're interested in the disciplines of 10 11, you might consider setting aside. Yeah, she's got some flyers right back there. Because I'll give you an example, the retreat Joe and I are going to do in December, the whole weekend is the 10th and 11th step, the entire weekend. So, and we were just talking about that. I think more and more in the future, our intent in these would be literally to take a whole weekend on just a couple steps, like we were talking about the idea of doing an entire weekend on the fourth step. Much, much more specific stuff, because it's very difficult to go through the steps. I've talked with you about 6 and 7. I'm going to talk with you a little bit about 8 and 9, but talk about 8. I think I can probably clear up some questions that some of you have asked. Because I'm at a place right now of the 8th step. So what am I going to do? Having just completed some inventory, I have some names from that, so they will go on my list. I will take probably a minimum of 2 weeks, and in prayer and meditation, ask God to show me anyone else that I might have harmed in the course of the last year that I have not been awake to. Every time I do this, several things happen, is more names come, number one. Number two, some stuff will bubble up from the past. I've yet to do this when something did not bubble up from the past. I'll have my list. I also like to do something else I've learned over the years, and Joe and I do this with each other. is people that I care about and interact with quite a bit. Many times there's never any inventory to write on them, but those relationships are important to me, and I just like to ask the question, you know, is there anything I might have done to create any harm? It's because I like to keep it clean between us. Chris Raymer and I do that every now and then. And so I'll do that as well with some of my pals. Just sit down and say, you know, I'm on the ninth step and nothing came up, but I just want to know in my relationship with you, have I done anything to create any harm? And then sometimes there is, and then sometimes there isn't. So you might consider that. People who we're close to sometimes, you know, we'll do that. We do some things and we're not awake to it, create some harm, and we don't even have an awareness that we, you know, that we did that. But, you know, when you get to the eighth step, it says we need more action without which we find faith without works is dead. So let's look at steps 8 and 9. They're together. You've heard Joe and I talking earlier about 9, but 8 and 9 are together. We have a list of all the persons we've harmed to whom we're willing to make amends. We made this list. We took inventory. So that's one place you get names. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we're going to go out to our fellows, repair the damage done in the past. We're going to attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated. Our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. For me, that's a fairly simple no-brainer. Let's see. Die an alcoholic death. Make the amend. Okay, I'm past that one. remember, it was agreed at the beginning we'd go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So you make this list. I was talking with Bart at the break, and I've had some a lot of freedom in just in making the list itself. Now, book talks about, in terms of making amends, harming others, etc., there are people who... It became obvious for various reasons that an approach was not wise. Say it maybe it's an ex-wife who's remarried or girlfriend. Maybe it didn't end on too good terms. They're in another relationship. They're in a marriage. You know, I'm not about to go dipping in there and do some things. So I've done many different things along these lines. I have had some people who said, I never want to see you again. Am I willing to sit across? Absolutely. There is an instruction here. If you can't see people, write a letter. And I was telling some people, this is something else I've done, is I write a letter as though I was sitting across from the person. I will find a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. If it's a female, I find a female. If it's a male, male. And I read the letter. And I'm willing to sit down and to make the amends. Bart and I were talking. He had a couple of those. Freedom comes in that process. Freedom comes in the willingness in the eighth step to go set this stuff right. So it'll happen. You know, that happens sometimes in the fourth and fifth step. Sometimes I've gotten free in the writing. Sometimes I got free in the fifth step. Sometimes I get freedom in the making of the list. Sometimes I get freedom in the making of the amends. So, you know, it does both. Some of my own experiences with amends. I had an extensive list. I lived in 6 or 7 states. I was like the big book says, I was a tornado roaring through the lives of others. There's no other way to say that. The companies that I worked for, bosses I had, fellow employees, girlfriends, male friends I had, family, brothers, their wives. I was an absolute tornado. For those of you who have this concept of I didn't really harm too many people, turn to channel 37. Watch some of the episodes on a tornado. Get some idea of what tornadoes do to a town. Maybe it'll pull you a little bit out of, you know, out of that delusion. I had, for me, there were a lot of financial amends, a sum of money that I felt that I just couldn't get to. I hadn't filed taxes for many years. It took me 14 years to pay back the Internal Revenue Service. Matter of fact, I'm still grieving that loss. It was the most intimate, longest-term one I've ever had. But I hadn't filed for 7 years. Paid all the money back. Sitting across from parents and brothers and I had a sister-in-law who wouldn't let me make amends to her for 6 years. She thought I had something to do with my brother going to penitentiary, and that's because I had something to do with my brother going to penitentiary. And she was a little angry about that. Fortunately, it wasn't there very long, but she called me up after 6 years because I made the approach, and she was very clear. She didn't have anything to say to me, and there wasn't anything she wanted to hear. And I think 6 years went by, and she made that call, and she said, "You remember that thing you do in... You know, that amend thing you wanted to do?" She said, "Yeah, I'd like to listen to that now." So, and she and I talk with some frequency. Boy, I had to go back to a bunch of states. I had to go to some employers. I worked for three major companies. Two of those were insurance companies, blue chip companies. You know, I had to go back and make amends to those. I wish it was just padding an expense account, but when an employer pays you, and you have a job description, and you're not fulfilling that job description, you owe an amend. And I owed an amend for not being a good employee. I didn't give them a fair day's work, and I had some amazing stuff happen off that. Human resources departments don't know what to do with that kind of stuff. When they get a letter and you say, you know, I worked for you for 3 years, and realistically, I only worked one, and I'm willing to pay back 2 years' worth of salary if that's something you would like me to do. I did that with a... company in Pennsylvania. I worked for them 1 year, and they paid me $28,000. And actually, I worked about 1 month, probably. And so I had other things I was doing. And I had a boss who didn't live. I saw him two times in that year, and it's exactly what I did. I had some idea of how much I padded the expense account, and the boss had long since left. So the only thing I was left to do was write the human resource department, and I got very clear on there what I thought I owed him and everything else. And the guy actually called me back, and he said, "Here's what you can do to set this right. Don't ever apply for a job with us again." And he did. He was thankful. He quizzed me a little. He said, "I've never in my life gotten a letter like this, where you had someone who was willing to pay back a salary that we paid." So he had some questions about that, simply because he had never experienced it. So I had some of those. Joe's mentioned briefly, you know, parents. You know, you how do you make amends? Through the process of amends that I botched, I learned one of the ways in which I harm people that are real close to me is that I robbed them of emotional security. If I had not been told that, I would not have known that. I would have never seen that. But I basically had one of my wives talk to me about the number of times that she would lay in bed and wonder if I was alive or dead.